So, hey everybody, it's Tuesday at 4. This is Eric Mann. I'm the host of Voices from the Front Lines, the 4 o'clock public affairs hour on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming live on the web all over the world at kpfk.org. I'm real excited about the show today. We have executive producer Julie Thompson of a terrific film, Nebraska, which we're going to talk about. And I have a little review I've done of the film of Nebraska. I'm going to do it towards the end so Julie doesn't have to listen to my opinions. She's heard enough. But the first thing, Julie, is seriously, what is a producer and what is an executive producer? That's the first thing I wanted to ask you about.
Well, it's interesting. There usually an executive producer is associated with somehow gathering the resources together to make the film. But in this case, the process was a little bit different. I had found the script. I was just telling people outside that I was on the board here for in 2001 or two. And I got a job to go to produce a TV series in Seattle, a science series for PBS. On that series, so I had to leave the board. On that series, I met the writer, Bob Nelson, who was also working on the series. And he asked me to read his first screenplay. He'd written sketch comedy in Seattle for 10 or, 14 years, sort of an SNL clone called Almost Live. So I thought the script was great, and I wanted to bring it to a couple of producers. One specifically I knew, Ron Yerxa, who I knew through the Liberty Hill Foundation. I didn't know him through film yet. I just knew him through a charity, a foundation that did a lot of social change work in Southern California. And so when they liked the script, he had a producing partner, and he said, well, we never share credit. So you really, because I wanted a producer credit.
Right.
So I said, I'll take what's considered, a slightly different, but in some people's mind, I guess, an elevated credit, an executive producer. So it was really, that was the credit I could negotiate for myself. So that's the difference in some cases.
Well, let me ask you this, because I want to make sure we talk about the film, but as an organizer, and also as somebody who raises a lot of money and is always trying to raise money for the movement, I think a lot of people don't understand what a producer does. And you said to me, I'm surprised you asked me to be on the show. Why don't you want one of the stars? And I said, because producers to me are really important. So tell us, regardless of your title and their title for a minute,
right?
What do the three of you have to do to get something from a screenplay to casting to funding to a contract?
Right.
Not a lot, but let's spend 5 minutes on
it. Sure, absolutely. Well, you find material you think is worthy or, ready to present to people for funding. And, maybe you help develop that material with the writer. Maybe you find a book and hire a writer to adapt that book. It's different sort of with
right.
each process. With our process, Bob Nelson had written a wonderful script, and it was his first screenplay, but it was all there, the dark and the light, the frailty of the human condition, and I just loved it. So I helped him get it ready to present and brought it down to the producers, Ron Yerxa and Albert Berger. And then we, had some back and forth about who to present it to. They had some ideas because they had already worked with Alexander Payne. They'd worked with Steven Soderbergh. And they were already getting a reputation as two of the most principled and best producers of indie pictures in Hollywood. And so from there, they included me as much as they could in the process, but they took it eventually to Alexander. He signed on, but he had just shot About Schmidt, which is a road movie, and
right.
then he shot Sideways, another road movie. So he didn't want to, he was sick of working in cars, basically,
right.
having to shoot in cars. So he put off doing Nebraska. He kept coming back to it every couple of years. So it took 10 years. But in the meantime, Ron and Albert made a deal with Paramount, with Alexander attached to do it. and several, you know, and, you know, several successive regimes at Paramount went through the mill, basically, from the time that we made the deal to the time that it actually went into production.
And so do the producers in this case have to raise the money, or can they get it to Paramount, and Paramount says, we will...
No, Paramount,
we have a budget to produce this.
They entice Paramount into it. They sell them on the idea of the screenplay. And at this point, I think Paramount was very interested in working with Alexander. By then, Alexander had made Sideways. He had yet to make the Descendants.
Right.
But he was at least, you know, he had made Election. He had made About Schmidt. He had made Sideways. He was really garnering a lot of attention, a lot of awards, a lot of nominations. And Paramount wanted to be in business with him. And in fact, you know, perhaps even more than they love the material, but it's obviously a small story. It's not the kind of film like some of the others that they've made that are, you know, have potential for huge revenue streams. So I think their main thing was being in business with Alexander Payne.
Well, that's also being a good organizer. I mean, these days, I'm told that you need to, if you're going to try to sell a script, you either need to have an actor who is bankable in their eyes, or a director who's bankable in their eyes. So I want to, with that in mind, a lot of our listeners, I really would love you to go out. If you haven't seen the film Nebraska, it's really terrific, and I'm going to give a little review of it in a little bit, but I want Julie to talk first. But well worth seeing, I mean, certainly in my top 10 of the year, maybe even higher, and I'll explain why later. But I was kind of shocked at how great it was, if I could say. I thought it was going to be pretty good, but I must admit, I was kind of blown away, which I'll explain. I think the dialogue is amazing. The characters, I mean, I'm a writer. I listen carefully to scripts, and the authenticity of dialogue versus sometimes, you know, somebody wrote something that's very clever, but it doesn't feel quite right. The understatement, the willingness to look at people's faces, the camera staying longer on somebody's face rather than shorter, which I'll get to. So I was kind of thrilled by it, and of course I was thinking of you going into it. Tell me what you feel about the film. Tell our listeners, when you saw the script, that's a good way to start. When you first saw the script, what jumped out at you, since there's millions of scripts out there, what touched you in this?
Well, you know, to me, life is sort of absurd, and there's a quotient of human frailty in all of us. There's like this ego versus, you know, frailty vying for dominance. And I think what Bob Nelson captured in that script was a sense of the absurdity of life, and also a sense of just the quotidien family struggling to make sense of their lives. So it had both the light and the dark. It was both funny, but it was also poignant. It had pathos in it. It was not sentimental. I really don't like sentimental film, you know, in the sense that they're milking it for sentiment. But this script had everything and that I thought in that balance. And the balance was really quite wonderfully measured. So it made me laugh a lot. It made me just think of my own family, think of the Midwest where I grew up, and all of these taciturn people who live out their lives saying very little, but trying to eke out an existence and a life and a family.
Well, when I read my review, and then you could respond to my review, is that okay?
Yeah, that would be grand.
You'll give you a sense of... Give you a sense of how I saw it, and then we can keep talking about it.
Sure.
This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines. We're with Julie Thompson, the executive producer of the film Nebraska, which we really hope you go out and see, especially, as I'll explain, small-budget films need viewers big time. It's very important to see yourself as an organizer in the sense that if you like a film, we got to get people out to buy tickets. Okay. Nebraska is, and by the way, I don't have to apologize, but this is, since you are so invested in this, it's interesting to see different eyes and different ways people saw the thing that you produced, okay?
I'm...
You good?
Yeah, right. I'm good at that.
All right. Nebraska is a beautifully crafted film about aging, families trying to carry out their dreams, the false promises of the system, greed and loyalty, the curse of the almighty dollar, and the profound loneliness of white folks living clueless in a dying society. The unspoken realities of Black, Latino, and most importantly, Native American life on the very plains of Nebraska, where they were decimated, cried out during the film for me. Unbearable when whites, whether suffering or succeeding, do not acknowledge they're living on stolen land. For the screenwriter, Bob Nelson, to integrate any reality of present Native American life and anger at the still white settlers would derail the project, because the fragile reality of the painfully marginal white folks in the film that describes their lives of quiet desperation would not be able to survive that reality check. Still, I don't expect every filmmaker to share my politics or sensibilities, and the world of white folks, commonly thought of by many as the dominant culture, this is a wonderful film for all humanity. It's a powerful, profoundly, and consciously understated film, portraying the profound sadness of white working class folks growing old in a society that does not give a damn whether they live or die, and a family trying to grasp something of hope despite the delusions. The writing is brilliant. So many times I laughed with ironic appreciation, felt profound sadness, and times was just so impressed with the carefully crafted, powerful, raw lines coming out of the hearts, minds, and mouths of a brilliant cast. Nebraska stars Bruce Dern as an alcoholic, lonely, elderly man, fighting early-onset dementia but still with his wits about, believing he's won the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes. And according to the letter he gets in the mail, and why would they lie, must come to Lincoln, Nebraska to pick up his prize that could be $1 million. Dern plays old as really old. Stoop walk, nose hair longer than that of his head, disheveled, but fiercely determined to pick up his $1 million. He's brought to life by his dream of wealth and the support of a skeptical but devoted son, played by Will Forte. Many of us remember Forte from Saturday Night Live. I thought his work was excellent. I felt very badly when he left. His evolution in the film as a son, who in fact has nothing going in his own life to leave. He barely sells stereos and tells people he's in the, quote, home electronics business, and a condescending but affectionate desire to humor his father's fantasy places the two of them in a great road picture in which radical transformations take place in their relationship, one word, glance, stare, grunt, and smile at a time. June Squibb is the powerful, bitter, but upbeat wife who, speaking of her husband's journey to find $1 million, says, "I never knew this son of a bitch ever wanted to be a millionaire. He should have thought about it years ago and worked for it." As the film evolves, and it does, she emerges as a complex and well-drawn figure, critical of but devoted to her husband, a power in her own right, the defiant and ferocious protector of a family when hustlers and opportunists try to steal her husband's fool's gold before he even gets it. And given Dern's slow, understated energy, the most powerful force in the film, whose character, thanks to a fine script and fine acting, often takes up the center of the stage. Stacey Keach plays a manipulative loudmouth who welcomes Dern to his town and then tries to settle old scores. Old scores are hard to settle because there's always at least two sides to every story, and as people age, it's not clear any of us remember the story itself all that well. But when it comes to money, people make the stuff up as they go along. He's also the king, that is Stacey Keach, of a kingdom of tragicians. Old people sitting at a bar trying to make something new out of old stories and even older memories of when they had a job or the town had any income, who needs someone whose own delusions of leadership at least offer them some hope and entertainment in their repetitive despair. Director Alexander Payne is one of my favorites. He makes, quote, small films, the ones I love the most, where people can actually talk in full sentences, where ideas are allowed to breathe, where understatement is not a device, but the main way life moves and assumes that the viewers have not just the patience, but the appreciation to enjoy scene after scene develop, so that the best parts, the ironies, the confrontations, the jokes, the inside, actually come out of something you saw and experienced in real time.
A very apt review, and I think you've pinpointed something that, to take it from Bob Nelson's script and give it into the hands of someone as skillful as much of a humanist, although I'm not sure he defined himself that way, as Alexander, is what really helped to make the film as good as it is. And it is, to me, one of the top three or four films this year. And I know, obviously, I'm not objective about that. But in some other hands, it could have been actually much less good a film. And Alexander he's meticulous in his casting. He's meticulous and creative in his use of locations, the use of ordinary people to people a scene, to bring a scene more to life and make it more realistic. He took a year to cast the film.
Really?
Yes, that long, and to find the locations. And he is from Nebraska. So although he's lived in Omaha, he really appreciated the opportunity to go out and work in small towns and the kinds of towns that are not vital anymore, that are not as populated. And to me, some of it calls out to still photography, like Walker Evans or Robert Frank. And he and his cinematographer, Faden Papamichael, really captured, I think, the landscape of those dying towns very well, in the midst of the story.
Well, you know, I've had so many events in my life, but at one point I went to Stearns, Kentucky, mm-hmm. to follow a coal mining strike, a wildcat strike against big employers that the United Mine Workers mm-hmm. was not even supporting. Mm-hmm. And there I am, a Jewish guy from New York, and I'm in the middle of Stearns, Kentucky, and it's in this particular part of it, it was almost all white coal miners. And I stayed there for about a week or 10 days. I stayed in a little hotel and played pool every night and I was just really struck by how sort of everybody's beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, if you really get into wherever you go, there's a story there. There's a struggle going on. There's a beautiful thing in Nebraska about who goes back to the newspaper. Oh, it says the wife goes back, right?
No, Will Forte's character, David Grant, right. goes to the newspaper because he wants to, sort of distance himself and tell the person who's going to, write a big story about Woody, his dad, winning $1 million, that he really didn't win the money. And what he finds out then is something about Woody's past life that helps to make him understand his father a bit more.
Right. And that woman was a major force in his life, was an old lover earlier in high school.
Yes.
And was jealous of Woody's wife, who took her away from her.
Right.
And, folks, you got to go see this movie because, the thing that I really love about it is just as a scene where did the son also have a drinking problem?
Well, no, he's trying to not drink. I don't think he's there yet, but he fears his father's alcoholic, functioning alcoholic state. And so he doesn't want to follow in that footpath. So he's trying to not drink, but he, isn't totally there yet in a commitment to not drink.
So in the process where he doesn't want to drink, he makes a decision to realize, you know what, the bar is my father's hangout. This is where he's comfortable. I'm either going to sort of sit on the outside and keep saying, Dad, I don't drink, Dad, I don't drink. Or on this road trip, I'll have a few beers with my father. Hmm. I thought it was very beautiful. And again, you could watch his mind, you could almost watch him making the calculation. I don't want to drink. I do want to drink. But is this really the role I want to play with my father, is keep saying, Dad, I'm not drinking. So that was sort of an overture to his father. The Publisher's Clearing House, which is his, only a mild pun on it, whatever they call it, almost the same word. But, the idea that you have to understand there really are millions of people who thought they've won. And these people are not stupid. And why do you think they put out all these ads of the woman winning? And then, of course, they have all the language where it's just not a spoiler, where it didn't say you won. It said you had a chance to win.
Right.
But if your number's right.
But when Bob started to do research to write this story, he found out that people actually do get in their cars and show up hundreds of miles away to these places in hopes that they'd won.
Oh, I know.
You know, and that this is something that has happened all the time.
Oh, it was totally believable.
Yeah.
I was totally believable. And obviously, I'm very deeply moved by this. I mean, he keeps saying, you know, he's saying, the son says, Dad, you didn't win. Dad, you didn't win. And he says, hey, how do you know? Mm-hmm. Are you really writing off? Maybe I think I won. Are you going to be the one who deprives me of my $1 million? So that's a sort of an interesting,
or
right?
deprives him of the dream of $1 million.
That's right.
Yeah. It's sort of about legacy and dreaming at that point for Woody, I think. So.
Right. And see if you agree with this. So he's saying, in a certain way, he's saying to his son, are you really the one who wants to say, I didn't go to Lincoln because mm-hmm. my son wouldn't take me?
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, he realizes, you know what? My dad's all excited about this. He hasn't been excited about anything for years. He's been sitting on his couch.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do this. Mm-hmm. And
also, well, David's character is one. His life is not going so great. He has
right.
a sort of a dead-end job. He's just, his girlfriend has just moved out after 2 years. So he's assessing what his next steps are, too. So to get out of town for a week seems pretty attractive at that moment.
And there's a lot of fun stuff in the film. The voice you're hearing is Julie Thompson. This is Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines. You can tell we like this film. We're talking about these people like they're our friends.
Yeah. They are my
right?
friends.
They're your friends. They're definitely your friends. You've lived with them for 10 years.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to make sure we understand this, that, you know, I say this a lot of times, but there's a fine line between visionary and delusional. And usually it's only by what happens. You know, you were
yes.
either delusional 10 years ago or now it turns out you're visionary, right? But I want to thank you because I don't think people understand that things change because somebody made a choice. Somebody made a decision. Somebody had the will to go through 4 Paramounts and 3, you know, to stick with Alexander Payne while he made 2 other movies and that he took a year scripting it. I think the casting is really, really brilliant. And just one other thing I want to say to Julie Thompson here, there is stuff in the film where the more that the son is trying to deny that his father does have $1 million, the more everybody is convinced that he's going to win $1 million. So it sort of becomes a reverse psych.
Yeah.
And all these people come out of the wall to both sort of glorify Woody. All of a sudden, oh my God, how did he become a millionaire? And then, of course, without going into details, all his so-called friends and relatives begin to plot how to get some of the money.
Yeah.
That's one of the pretty amazing,
yeah.
beautiful parts of the film.
And those are intermeshed, those professional actors with people who have never acted before in their lives or stepped on a local stage once in their high school, you know, drama or something. So, and they mesh wonderfully well, those both the professional actors and the actors who are, you know, just denizens of small Nebraska towns. So.
Well, a couple of last questions. Where is it playing now in L.A.?
It's playing at the Landmark and the Lemley Theaters. I don't know. In outlying regions, it may be in other theaters.
In terms
other
of
theater.
Is it playing in the Sunset?
Yes.
It is?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Great.
And
well, listen, folks, obviously, there's a couple more minutes.
Well, it's funny.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned American Indians when you were talking
okay.
about the sort of the landscape, because Bob Nelson's next film that he hopes to make, and possibly with himself directing, is a contemporary story involving a tribe of Indians in the Northwest, and where he is from, by the way. Some of the people that he wrote about for Nebraska are people that he met in the Midwest, but some of them are people that he grew up with in Kent, Washington, a small, you know, smallish town outside of Seattle and Tacoma.
Well, afterwards we'll get emails and at least we'll send it to everybody and say they can download this interview off the Voices from the Frontline site, and I hope some of the cast and people would like to hear our conversation.
I'm sure they would. My husband and I have become especially close to June Squibb, and Bruce is wonderful. Will to see Will blossom as an actor because he's done a certain kind of acting in his life. It's a real, you know, you nurture a script like this for so many years. You have wonderful producing partners, and then you put it in the hands of somebody as skilled as Alexander. He assembles this cast, and you feel that, you know, that it's safe somehow. And that's how I felt in this process. I was elated that we were finally making it, of course, after 10 years. But I felt that if anybody was going to be able to get all the nuances of it, the resonance of it, that when I first read it, it would be Alexander Payne.
Well, we're going to end here, and let me ask you something, listeners. This is Voices from the Frontlines. I think you know that we have a really wonderful website now, www.voicesfromfrontlines. There's no the in there. voicesfromfrontlines.com. It's got all the past shows are up. Julian Lamb, who's right now in the studio videoing this as we talk, gets them up within about 2 days. There are just beautiful interviews up there. Some of them are going to be made into transcripts. This video is going to be up in some way that we'll figure out. But we need you to register on the site. The reason is because if you register on the site, it's over on the right-hand side as soon as you click on there. That means that you're on our mailing list. And our mailing list is very important because that means every Monday or Tuesday morning, you do get the advance notice of who's going to be on the show. Often you can Google them. Often then you can, oh, great, I know who's going to be on the show. And for us, it's important because this show is trying to make something happen. Like Nebraska, I'd like to hope that at least 100 of our listeners would go out and see the film.
That would be a wonderful thing. And thank you, Eric, for your, and just you championing the film helps a lot, you know, and understanding it and passing it on. And people using social media to pass it on about the film if they like it. It's a great help. And you know, we're getting some love in the awards, you know, department, which of course helps box office and helps people to know about the film. But, you know, there's some incredibly razzle-dazzle, big sprawling story films out with multiple stars, you know, like The Wolf of Wall Street or American Hustle or Gravity. And you know, and we're right up there with them, not in terms of box office so much, but certainly in terms of fine film.
Tell us, one more minute. Tell us about what have been some of the nominations so far.
Well, Bruce Dern won at Cannes, at the right. Cannes Film Festival. He was Best Actor.
Amazing.
A wonderful thing. He also was voted Best Actor from the L.A. Film Critics the other night. We got 5 Golden Globe nominations. We didn't win any Golden Globes.
But tell us the nominations.
They were Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actress, June Squibb, Best Actor, Bruce Dern, and Best Screenplay, Bob Nelson.
Congratulations. That's wonderful, wonderful. I haven't seen the Golden Globes yet, so I don't know that you didn't win.
No.
I T-vote it, so I'll go find out.
Well, we'll see Thursday.
About the Oscar nominations?
Yeah, Oscar nominations come out Thursday morning.
Well, I really hope you get a best film, of most important of all. And Julie Thompson, thank you so much for being on Voices from the Frontlines. We'll do it again.
Eric, my pleasure.
Okay, take good care. We'll see you next Tuesday at 4 on KPFK 90.7 FM. And it's been a wonderful show, and thank you so much for paying attention.